Case number 22-3852, Derek Block et al. V. James Canepa et al. Oral arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. James Alexander Tanford for the appellants.
Good morning. May it please the court. We have requested 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Fine.
Plaintiffs in this case are challenging two Ohio laws relating to the delivery of wine that discriminate against interstate commerce, sales from other states. If the product were anything other than alcohol, strict scrutiny would apply and the law would be easily struck down without further inquiry because non-discrimination is a bedrock principle of the Commerce Clause. But in Tennessee wine, the Supreme Court said that that's not the case because when alcohol is involved, a second constitutional provision is involved, so a different inquiry is required. The converse is also true. If this were ordinary regulation of alcohol, minimal scrutiny, extremely deferential standard of review would apply, and it could easily be upheld because the 21st Amendment gives states the authority to regulate alcohol. So the question is, if it's not strict and it's not minimal, what is the right standard of review in a case involving two conflicting constitutional provisions? And the answer is some level of intermediate scrutiny. Intermediate scrutiny has been used by the court before, the Supreme Court before, when the 21st Amendment conflicts with another constitutional provision. It did it in 44 Liquor Mart versus Rhode Island when it conflicted with the First Amendment in alcohol advertising.
To use a standard different from the one that's used in Liebhamoff?
Yeah, well, Liebhamoff used the minimal, highly deferential standard, or the lead opinion did, because under the facts of that case and the presentation, it characterized the case as non-discriminatory in the first place. Michigan's history was that when they had previously allowed interstate shipping, they had allowed it without a license and without regulation. They repealed that law and replaced it with a ban, so that the lead opinion in Liebhamoff characterized that case as plaintiffs seeking the original status, which was unlicensed and unregulated shipping, and they said that's not the same as an in-state business, which is subject to licensing and regulation. The concurring opinion said, we think there may be some elements of discrimination here, but even if there were, the result would be the same because the plaintiffs in that case had not refuted the state's claim that the ban was necessary to protect public health and safety. And the reason that they hadn't in that case was that the Supreme Court changed the rules in the middle of the litigation. The record was established in Liebhamoff prior to Tennessee Wine and prior to this court's decision in the underlying case of Byrd versus Tennessee Wine.
So what evidence do you have here that would distinguish this case from the Liebhamoff case?
We've submitted some 20 documents that are of two types to show that there is no actual harm, public safety threat from the direct shipment of wine that is not posed by the general availability of alcohol. And they include statements from, I believe it was six state regulators in states that have allowed licensed direct shipping, saying there have been no problems in their states. We have federal data from National Institute of Health on per capita consumption. We have data on domestic violence, on drunk driving, on aggravated assaults, on all of the possible kinds of ramifications related to alcohol consumption, and they show there is no pattern. The states that allow direct shipping don't have any increased consumption, don't have increased access by minors, don't have any of the increased social problems. So unlike Liebhamoff, we have thoroughly refuted their claim that this is necessary to protect public safety. They've been allowing out-of-state wineries to get a license and ship directly to consumers for years. So out-of-state, you've got a winery with a bottle of wine selling it at retail and shipping it into the state. Next door, you have a retail establishment selling that same bottle of wine. One is allowed and one isn't.
So in Ohio, a resident of Ohio can order wine from a winery in California, and the California winery can ship it consistent with the Ohio law?
Yes.
Ship it right into Ohio?
Yes, Your Honor, without going through a wholesaler, it's not subject to inspection. All the sort of concerns they have about out-of-state retailers are exactly the same. And they had no evidence there's been any problem caused by this kind of wine.
I know there are two limits here. Does the personal transportation law apply? So if a resident of Ohio wanted to order 12 bottles of wine from a California winery, could the resident of Ohio have that shipped in by UPS or whatever?
Yes. If you wanted 12 bottles of wine from a winery, you can get it shipped in. If you wanted only 6 bottles, you could drive there and bring it back. But you could not, even the 6 bottles, which they'll allow you to bring back in your own vehicle, they will not allow to be shipped back. So the question is not whether the regulation of alcohol in general is a good thing. Of course it is. The question is not whether excess alcohol consumption causes a whole bunch of problems. Of course it does. But Ohio allows all sorts of sales of alcohol. It doesn't try to restrict it particularly. This is like the one instance where they try to prevent it. Why? Because it protects the interests of in-state retailers.
So one line of argument that is made in these cases is that this three-tier system is allowed under the Supreme Court and Sixth Circuit precedent, and that somehow the direct shipping requirement is needed if the three-tier system is going to remain. Is that what's the flaw in that argument in your view?
The flaw in that is twofold. One is, of course, that historically that was probably true. Historically, after the repeal of prohibition, lots of states went to a three-tier system. And under a three-tier system, the manufacturer, in this case a winery, can only sell to a wholesaler, it can only sell to a retailer, and that's the only place a consumer can get it. Ohio doesn't have a three-tier system. It abandoned it a long time ago. It now has, there are six permits you can get in Ohio if you're a manufacturer that allow you to operate your own retail outlet, to distribute to consumers, to distribute to retailers. They don't have three tiers. They have a licensing system. Lots of those licenses are limited to being a producer or an importer or a wholesaler or a retailer, but not all of them are limited to a single tier of the system. Like I said, six of them, including the one with respect to out-of-state wineries and in-state wineries. They're the wine producers. They do not have to go through a three-tier system. It's optional for them. The second thing is, to make an argument that the three-tier system was somehow constitutionalized by the 21st Amendment cannot be true. For one thing, it didn't exist at the time the 21st Amendment was passed. It was created after the 21st Amendment, so that could not have been what the ratifiers had in mind. Secondly, as the Seventh Circuit pointed out, there's no reason, in another case brought by the same plaintiff, Mr. Lebemoff, there's no reason to think that the Constitution somehow favors a three-tier system over a four-tier system or a two-tier system or a state-run system. The origin of this was the phrase in Granholm that said that a three-tier system is unquestionably legitimate. It did not suggest that other kinds of systems were non-legitimate. And Tennessee Wine specifically said, addressed that dictum and said, yes, that they cast their imprimatur on a three-tier system, but they did not suggest that individual discriminatory features within the three-tier system were immune from review.
So in terms of distinguishing this case from Lebomoff, you've said and pointed to the evidentiary differences. Is there a significant statutory difference between the Michigan law and Lebomoff and the Ohio law here that you're challenging?
Not in any really meaningful way. They were both bans on retailer direct shipping, whether directly or indirectly applied. The major difference there was the historical context, that Michigan's history had been to allow unlicensed and unregulated shipping, and Ohio's had not. And in any event, what this court said in Byrd and what the Supreme Court said in Tennessee Wine is that this is a fact-based inquiry. The fact that the statutes are similar, just like in the previous case, the fact that two universities might have similar sort of disciplinary systems does not determine the outcome of a case. It has to do with the facts. And the facts in the Michigan case, in Lebomoff, the record was developed in 2018. Well, discovery closed in 2017. The record was developed in 2018. Summary judgment motions were filed in that case the very week that this court handed down the Byrd decision, and a full year before the Tennessee Wine decision. As the law existed at the time, the Cherry Hill Vineyards case had said that the Sixth Circuit applies strict scrutiny. Tennessee Wine said, no, we've got to, it's got to be lower than that. And Granholm, which was the leading case, said public health and safety is not a legitimate reason to shut down interstate commerce because you can protect public health and safety through licensing and regulation. So on the factual record, when Lebomoff came up, strict scrutiny was appeared to apply, which meant the entire burden was on the state, and public health and safety was not an issue under Granholm. So there was no record developed in that case, as the concurrence points out, that addresses the issue.
Your red light is on, so that if you want to save your rebuttal time.
Thank you,
Your Honor. You probably should.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Marissa Palumbo on behalf of Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost and the Director of the Ohio Department of Public Safety, Andy Wilson. With me at counsel's table today is Mr. John Kulowitz, who represents the intervener defendant, should the court have any specific questions for the intervener. As an initial matter, Your Honors, I'd like to stress that this circuit's decision in Lebomoff, in conjunction with the record here, is dispositive. As explained in Lebomoff, alcohol is different. It is the only consumer product specifically identified in the Constitution. Section 2 of the 21st Amendment reserves to the states authority to regulate the transportation, importation, and sale of alcohol within its borders. That is, the 21st Amendment gives states regulatory authority that they would not otherwise enjoy. Because of this, state alcohol regulations are subject to a lower level of dormant commerce clause scrutiny than regulations of any other consumer product. That test, set forth by the Supreme Court in Tennessee Wine and applied by this court in Lebomoff, is whether the challenge requirement can be justified as a public health or safety measure or on some other legitimate non-protectionist ground.
What do we do with the argument that counsel on the other side mentioned, that this doesn't have any, this three-tier scheme here doesn't have any public health or safety basis?
Your Honor, the state, in conjunction with the intervener defendant here, have built a robust record showing the many public health and safety interests that these laws serve. Specifically, I'll start with temperance purposes. These Ohio laws enable the state to impose price regulations, such as minimum markups on the price of wine, and no volume discounts are permitted for retailers. These price control measures promote temperance and prevent a race to the bottom among alcohol retailers looking to sell the least regulated and therefore the cheapest alcohol to Ohio consumers.
Do you have data that supports those statements you just made? I mean, your opposing counsel says he's got an evidentiary basis for arguing to the contrary, and data and reports and all that. Do you have data that support those conclusions?
Yes, Your Honor. I would point the court to a few things. First of all, as I mentioned, Ohio imposes minimum markups on the sale of wine. And the state of Illinois, where Plaintiff House of Glens is located, does not impose similar price control regulations. Specifically, Illinois statutes allow purchases on credits by retailers, and they also allow retailers to receive volume discounts, both of which are prohibited by Ohio laws. I would also point the court to the record. There is evidence in the record.
Just on that point, if you could explain, is it necessary to ban the direct sales in order to ensure those particular policies that the state of Ohio wants to ensure, that there are no volume discounts and minimum markups?
I believe so, Your Honor, because in-state retailers are required to purchase their alcohol from in-state Ohio wholesalers, whereas Illinois retailers, Ohio could not require Illinois retailers to purchase their alcohol through in-state wholesalers, because that would violate the extraterritorial doctrine. And so I believe, you know, in order for the state to continue to press these interests of price controls and temperance, it would be directly undermined if you allowed the out-of-state retailers. There are over 640,000 out-of-state retailers to flood Ohio's market with this less controlled.
So there's no way of imposing controls on the out-of-state?
Not in that regard, Your Honor. Even under the standard that plaintiffs propose of a licensing system, the standards would not be the same for in-state and out-of-state retailers, even if Ohio were to issue a license to out-of-state retailers, in that in-state retailers are subject to physical inspections. Ohio would have no ability to go and inspect out-of-state retailers again because of the extra.
But the licensing could have a requirement that these various standards on pricing apply, couldn't it?
As far as pricing, again, I don't believe so, because the out-of-state retailers obtain their product from their in-state wholesalers, and I think it would be hard for Ohio to impose these price regulations on an out-of-state retailer, not to mention that Ohio would lack the same teeth that it has with respect to the in-state retailers, because if an in-state retailer were to violate these price control measures, Ohio could cut off the product supply to that retailer altogether. And that's because, again, the in-state retailers have to purchase from an in-state wholesaler, and wholesalers are subject to regulation by the state of Ohio as well. So if a wholesaler sells to a non-compliant reseller, the wholesaler itself would face penalties from the division. So Ohio can effectively cut off the supply of product to an in-state retailer, and it does not have that same ability.
But it could deny a license. It could deny a license to an out-of-state retailer.
It could deny a license, but that would not have that same impact or repercussions as it would as far as an in-state retailer in Ohio, again, because Ohio can cut off the product supply altogether to an in-state retailer. But as far as a retailer in Illinois, they can continue to get the product from their home state wholesalers. They continue to sell it to home state consumers, so they don't face as strict of repercussions as in-state Ohio retailers would.
I'm not sure I got an answer to my question. I was asking about data pertaining to the health and safety consequences upon consumers. If there's data or empirical studies in that regard, and you started talking about something else.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yes, Judge Clay, I will get to that. Yes, there is, in fact, plenty of data in the record showing these types of studies that you're looking for. For example, in the Kerr report, which is R53-4, it talks about a 2009 study related to a 2009 tax increase in Illinois on the beer, wine, and spirits prices. And that was found in the study to have reduced fatal alcohol-related traffic fatalities by 26%. And then with a larger reduction when looking at accidents involving those under the age of 30. So that study itself directly links these temperance measures, increased cost of alcohol, lowering traffic-related fatalities. There are also, throughout Dr. Kerr's report, other studies cited of similar examples of, price control measures, lowering sexually transmitted diseases, just various studies cited in both the Kerr report and the Jones and Stevenson expert report as well.
So your position then essentially is that because price increases via taxes or price controls within Ohio promotes temperance, in other words, the increase in the cost reduces the demand, that somehow having the direct shipment statute is necessary to make sure that out-of-state sales from, say, a California winery to a person cannot be satisfactorily dealt with in terms of cost controls.
Exactly.
Or taxes, in order so that there'll be this flood of people getting wine from California that then will cause more drunk driving, et cetera.
Exactly, Your Honor. And this was discussed by the circuit in the Liebemoff case, with respect to if these price controls, if the state's not able to maintain its three-tier system and the related prohibitions on direct to consumer shipments, it will essentially lead to a race to the bottom where retailers are trying to sell the cheapest, the least regulated alcohol. Of course, they have an incentive to do that in order to make a profit. And I wanted to point out, my colleague on the other side discussed the fact that out-of-state wineries are able to ship directly to Ohio consumers. And that is true. Ohio offers a Class S permits, which allows both in-state and out-of-state wineries to receive a permit that allows them to direct ship to consumers in Ohio. But there are very important distinctions between wineries and retailers. And first being that wineries, including out-of-state wineries, they sell only the products that they manufacture. So therefore, the products that's sold by an out-of-state winery to an Ohio consumer, it remains traceable by the state of Ohio. Whereas retailers, they can sell a variety of different products, and it would be a lot harder for the state to trace back if there was a tainted product. It would be a lot harder to trace back the source. Second, wineries.
It's a matter of setting up a reporting and regulatory scheme to be able to trace back. That's not as difficult or certainly not an impossible task to achieve, is it?
I would say perhaps not impossible, difficult. However, yes, I would say extremely difficult. As I mentioned earlier, there are over 640,000 out-of-state retailers of wine throughout the country. And so for the state of Ohio to be required to track every purchase and keep track of this and trace it back, it'd be much more difficult to do that with respect to a retailer, whereas with respect to a winery, again, they only sell their products. There are far fewer wineries in the country than the 640,000 plus wine retailers nationwide. The other key distinction between wineries and retailers is that wineries must hold a federal permit that is issued by the TTB, the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau. And so wineries are under the federal microscope and they must meet stringent federal requirements, while retailers are not federally regulated at all. So if a winery were to be non-compliant, they risk losing their federal license as well.
But the wineries would be selling to the retailers in Illinois, say. So the wineries would have been regulated under your idea that there's federal regulation already, and the retailers are just reselling the winery the wine from California to Ohio.
That assumes, Your Honor, that you know that the out-of-state three-tier system is set up in a way that requires out-of-state retailers to get their products in a certain way. And it also assumes that Ohio is required to accept how any other state sets up their three-tier system. There are many different varieties of three-tier system.
But we're talking about bottled goods here. Wine, or maybe sometimes wine is in cans, but essentially it's not like it's selling tainted lettuce or something like that. Right? So if the winery is subject to some kind of federal regulation in California, what's the problem with the winery delivering the wine to the retailer in Illinois and the retailer then delivering it to the consumer in Ohio? I don't see the health and safety aspect there at all.
Well, with respect to wineries shipping directly to Ohio consumers, Ohio has a way to know exactly where the product has come from. With respect to an out-of-state wholesale.
So how does Ohio know if an Ohio citizen gets wine either from a retailer in Illinois or from the winery in California? How does Ohio know that?
So out-of-state and in-state wineries that have these S permits that allow them to ship directly to consumers, they're required to file shipping reports with the division on a quarterly basis. So the division has those records and can trace back exactly.
And so you could have the same system vis-a-vis the retailer, right?
It would be much more challenging, again.
Just because of the numbers.
Because of the numbers, and also because we don't know exactly where the out-of-state retailers are getting their product. We'd be relying on another state's system of regulation. They might not be required to get it through a wholesale at all. It really would require Ohio to rely on another state system, which is exactly what the 21st Amendment does not require. The 21st Amendment gives states leeway to regulate the sale, transportation, and importation of alcohol within its borders in accordance with the preference of each state's citizens. I see that my red light is on. Unless the court has any further questions, I would ask the court to affirm the district court's decision in all regards.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think he had rebuttal time. You still have the 3 minutes.
Thank you. First of all, there were two other issues we didn't talk about that we'll submit on the briefs. One was whether or not plaintiffs, in fact, had standing to challenge the six bottle.
You should rely on your briefs because
yes.
It's not rebuttal.
Yes. Couple of things. One is they're absolutely right that Tennessee Wine said a different inquiry is required when alcohol is involved, but that doesn't mean that no inquiry is required. It is not. This, in the same opinion, they rejected an extremely deferential test, an extremely deferential standard of review when there's discrimination. There's clearly discrimination here.
So in response to Judge Clay's question about what data on health and safety consequences to consumers existed, Your opponent said there was plenty of data and specifically cited this Kerr report. How do you respond to that?
They're confusing expert opinion with data. Kerr is an economist. He claims no particular expertise in the alcohol business or wine shipping or direct. He was applying sort of theoretical economic analysis to some of these questions, like under econometrics, what kind of price increase would produce what kind of decrease in shipping, in consumption? And I believe there's an article cited in our reply brief that actually addresses that. And in any event, this was summary judgment. This was a record developed where it has to be admissible evidence. An expert can give his own opinion, but if an expert simply is a vehicle for saying, oh, by the way, here's a study which I'm not providing and you don't have a chance to question the person who developed it, that's hearsay. It can be used under Rule 702 or 03. It can be used by an expert to support his opinion, but it is not independently admissible. So that study, which is not in the record, there's just the expert summary of it, is not data. And in fact, on none of these issues, they have speculation by their experts that problems might arise that haven't arisen anywhere else and haven't arisen in the context of direct shipping from out-of-state wineries. And they're being disingenuous when they say there are 600,000 retailers. Most of those are convenience stores, grocery stores, and places that don't ship. The facts in the record show that in those states that allow licensing, only fewer than 200 actually sign up. And as they point out, I mean, in terms of tracking, I don't know, but for me, Amazon is able to track every single purchase I make, its source, even if it comes from China. This is an age of technology. The record keeping and tracking is not difficult. And even if it were, there's no evidence that there is a problem to begin with. This cannot promote public health and safety if there's no threat to public health and safety from the beginning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both for your argument, and the case will be submitted.